Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Episode 6, Chapter 6 of Tasmanian Devil, a Unique and Threatened Animal, David Bowen and David Pimbleton. The latter is actually a researcher, I don't know about David Owen. And this chapter is entitled, In the Matter of the Society and the Board. Now here's a quote by Maureen Johnston Riverside. A ranger's wife learns to cope with all sorts of emergencies, but the most bizarre was the day I was bathed a devil in the laundry tub. He had fallen into the sewage ponds at Strathorgan. A hydro worker was watched him swimming frantically around. He was eventually fished out with a pole, exhausted, panting, not looking or smelling very good. He stayed still, just shivering a while. I stood him in the warm water and lathered him up, working fast as my luck held. I lifted him out, toweled him down briskly, and he continued to look stunned and relocated him in the shed into a wooden box filled with warm blankets and left him in peace to recover his ordeal. When the children came home from school and went into the shed, they opened the door. The devil bolted for freedom. Well, I don't quite understand what that means. That's pretty unusual. Throughout the first half of the 20th century, the devil lived in a lengthening shadow of the tiger's disappearance and presumed extinction. But when the devil did receive attention, it wasn't good. According to the 1948 tourism publications, devils were ugly, bad-tempered, vicious, and settled to have them, and certainly with guns and dogs. Gillies Piney's research into devil populations remains susceptible. Sorry for this cough. I've got this thing in my throat. As a reader in zoology in the University of Tasmania and chair of the state's Animals and Bird Protections Board in the 1950s and 60s, he's uniquely placed to study the island's ecology. He provides interesting, potted modern history of the devil. This creature did not figure in the debates about the early board of the early boards because at the time it was rare to uncommon over all of the state. It was not until 1945 that devils appeared in the minutes of the ranger at the Lake St. Clair was reprimanded for being knowingly involved in the capture of two or more puissant for Pulson's circus. In 1950, the number had built up to enable the board to grant permits for their capture. In 1959, the pressure was being extended on the board to place them on the unprotected schedule on account of the damage they did to possums caught by trappers and to the weak sheep and lambs. No action was taken other than to grant permits to complainants provided they could prove the alleged damage. Depreciation came from more widespread in 1966. The board was issuing poisoning permits to control the devils. However, it was clear that very little was known about devils, and the research project was started in 1966 at the Corporation's Zoology Department at the University. The board was fortunate in that it had resources at that time to commence this work, as some of the members were very reluctant to issue poisoning permits for indigenous species about which very little is known. It's pretty amazing that that's still done. So this has come full circle. We can't poison rats. The project was important as it showed the board was prepared to switch resources from non-commercial into non-commercial or non-sporting species and treat them on a scientific merits rather than a political desirability of being seen to be studying the so-called game species. This is the board's first research program into non-game species. Every year between 66 and 75 at remote Granville Harbour on the west coast, Gulliver led a devil research team. They set up more than 5,000 traps at 19 locations, with such names as Harrison Back Pockets, Dead Heifer, Duck Creek Track, and Pig Farm. A total of 282 devils were captured, 949 times, 664 being recaptures. He also carried out extensive, so this is capture and recapture, so you can tell what the population is. You you capture 10, you mark 10, and say if you got 10% of new captures and recaptures, you know that that 10% is equal to 10, so you've got 100 devils. Pretty easy to work out. Amazingly how bad, that's explained at school. He also carried out extensive field research, so that is showing that there's really not many devils there. There may be 1,000 devils. He also carried out extensive field research at Cape Portland, northeastern Tasmania, published results, and initiated modern day devil research. But Gulia didn't have things all his own way. The politics of wildlife conservation management is as robust in Australia as anywhere else, as he earlier discovered through his seemingly innocuous and modest trade in zoo animal exports. For 6 years, conservationists repeatedly attacked the Animals and Birds Protection Boards for being a key player in the state's fauna export trade. The saga began in 1957 when the Sydney-based Wildlife Preservation Society in Australia, through the Journal of Australian Wildlife, wrote to the board expressing concern to the board's decision to give 2 Tasmanian devils as a gift to a Swiss zoo. Gulia replied that the director of the Basel Zoological Gardens... it's a beautiful picture of Dr. E.M. Lang had specifically travelled to Hobart to supervise the safe travel of animals, and that the devil's population has increased to such an extent that in some parts of the states we have to make special arrangements to reduce the numbers owing to their depredations. But the society resisted querying the legality of the deal and also questioned Lang's proficiency as wildlife management. The journal quoted a report in the Mercury in which Lang planned to return to Australia for more exhibits. They include lyrebirds, koala bear, which he is confident he can be trained to live and die other than gum leaves, which are unpeculable in Europe. poor thing. The fur really began to fly in the matter of the society and the board. So this is the board, the Wildlife Board, and the Society. It's pretty interesting. The publication of the 1962 issue of Australian Wildlife, using a photograph of a demure, attractive juvenile Tasmanian devil on its cover, the journal ran a lengthy article attacking Tasmanian slackness in not protecting the prime marsupial carnivore. The little animal, still a non-entity in the public consciousness, had now become unique and possibly endangered, yet the board seemed careless of its welfare. Long article entitled The Devil Again and begins with a report of the scape devil from the New South Wales Circus and refers scathingly to freezing devils in the London Zoo and concludes with a salute to hunting magazine Australian Outdoors, uncharacteristically deploring pastoral ignorance of Tasmanian's unique little carnivore. The article centrepiece, however, is the reproduction of a lengthy letter written to Gulia by Thistle J. Steed, the Society's Honorary Secretary, who was also the editor of the Australian Wildlife. Her letter stated and included 21 questions, and here we've got them. Is the board conducting a survey of the distribution of population of its Tasmanian devils? If so, when did the survey commence? What areas have been surveyed, and how many investigators employed in investigation B? Has the board or any member of it published any matter concerning the distribution of the population of its Tasmanian devil? If so, where, when was such a material published? How many members of the board are actually engaged in field research and have intimate knowledge of the Tasmanian devil in the wild state? What are the names of the members claiming to have such knowledge? Beautiful. Has the board made public any knowledge that it may possess on the distribution of population of density of Tasmanian devils through the Tasmanian press or questions asked in Parliament? Has it made public such knowledge in any other manner? Has the board made public aware that though the Tasmanian devils and other wholly protected fauna may be accidentally trapped, it is illegal on the part of the trapper to transfer such animals as trapped to places where they may be artificially confined under conditions opposite to the natural environment? If the board has made this matter apparent to the public, or by what means was it made, and has the board opinion on the matter been published in the Tasmanian press? If so, when? In the view... I love this. This is so good. In the view of this trend of Tasmanian public against zoos, does the board intend to issue further permits for the establishment of further zoos? Hello, darling. So, back again, reading this brilliant thing of these questions. In the view of the obvious trend of the Tasmanian public against zoos, does the board intend to issue further permits to establish zoos? How many permits have been issued by the board for zoos in Tasmania in the last 21 years? How many zoos Are they extant, and why it's precise, and what are the precise localities in which they are extant, and what are the names of the holders of the permits? In the view of the national trends against trading and trafficking in wildlife, does the board intend to issue further permits to individuals likely to engage in trafficking? 9. How many permits have been issued by the board to the export of Tasmanian devils to all sources, and precisely how many devils have been exported in the past 21 years? 10. In what year was the most devils exported? 11. The instances where the board issues permits to wildlife traders or persons engaged in the exhibition of traffic of wildlife, does the board charge a fee for such permits? Has the board fixed any limit to what may be paid and received in transactions dealing with sale of Tasmanian devils? If so, what is the monetary difference between the fee charged and the profits made by the individual trader? If so, how much is the fee of such permits? If not, to the aforementioned, why are the permits issued to individuals to possess possess wildlife in which it is public property? Does the, and that's some pretty amazing thing, that the entire thing is that you can't possess an animal because that is the property, you know, all is, the animal is not the property, it's not your property. Does the board agree or not agree that the negative view is apathetic to the purpose for which the board is created? 12. Does the board issue permits for the destruction of Tasmanian devils which are public properties, gratis or free, or is a fee charged? If a fee is charged for the permit, what is the monetary difference between the value of the fee and the cost of inspection of the public to establish the rightness of the permit? If the fee is not charged, why not? How many permits have been issued by the board for the destruction of Tasmanian devils since 1957? Does the board require whole permits for the destruction of the Tasmanian devil to return to the board with the numbers of animals they destroyed? If not, why not? If the board of the scientific value is of the destroyed Tasmanian devils, has the board made provision to see that such Tasmanians are not wasted? If there's legal obligation on the part of permit holders to return destroyed animals to the board? In brackets, the Wildlife Preservation Society of Australia is vitally concerned with the question in the view of the thoroughness of wastage of destroyed thylacines in the past, and the consequent rarity of both skeleton and anatomical materials, which, for the most part, is housed in foreign institutions. It is strongly urged that such situations should not be permitted to occur with respect to that. It's pretty amazing. Is the board able to name the Australian scientific institutions which have benefited by the donation of specimens? If so, how many institutions have received such a donation through the board? Is the board able to name the foreign institutions which have benefited from the donation of specimens? If so, how many donations have been made in the past 21 years, and what are the names of the recipient institutions? In connection with the press statement made recently by the chairman of the board concerning the alleged destruction of the Tasmanian devils at Birdport, will the board state how many permits for the destruction of the marsupial have been issued to date and how many animals have been destroyed? 19. Similarly, would the board state how many permits have been issued for the destruction of the Tasmanian devils during the past 3 years at or near the following Tasmanian townships? Tremor, Mathawat, Kawa. They're really gone in. This person's really gone. Just answer the bloody question. Reddit, Christmas Hills, Mole Creek, Birdport, Hamilton. 20. Is the board able to state what may be the favourable variation itself trending towards its survival and satisfactory numbers? Similarly, is the board able to state what may be unfavourable variations tending to otherwise? Question 21, the last one. To state that one of the species of mammals is as common as any other marsupial is too vague for empirical and analytical appreciation of species populations at position. Would the board state more precisely the numerical relationship between Tasmanian devils and other marsupials? Yeah, look, that's really good. Gilead commenced his research less than 3 years later, and it is likely that this correspondence provided some impetus for it, given the apparent lack of official scientific interest in devils at the time. Australian Outdoors, a classic hunting and fishing magazine, complete with advertisements for the latest firearms, boats, fishing tackles, ran an article in November 1961 entitled Protection That Doesn't Protect. The 3,000-word article by Jack Burrow attacked the Tasmanian farmers and grazers, accusing them of endangering the devil's future. Burrow wrote impressively understanding of the animal based on personal experience, and it's likely This is the first non-scientific published account detailing the ecology and behaviour of the animal in the wild. Bowen noted that very little known about the animal, and the only reliable information about the animal is given by Thoroton, a classic furred animals in Australia. 41, he gives 58 lines on this animal, not much to go by. Bowen's article led with praise for the protected status of the devil, while deploring the agricultural sector for branding it a ferocious killer of poultry and lambs. A farming group or groups had apparently been pushing the scare for some 2 years and had now warned that if they left unchecked, the devil would become a great menace as a dingo on the mainland. Boer insisted that those farmers were quite wrong and that he had scientific proof to back him up. Proof from who? None other than Dr. Eric Gulliard, Zoology Department of the University of Tasmania. Gulliard had recently conducted a study of the stomach contents of 18 devil skeptics in northern southern Tasmania, a heavily farmed part of the state. Only two had eaten wool, yet the Australian Wildlife, in commending the Boer article and quoting selectively from it, did not mention the nemesis Gulliard in the central role in making the Bulliard case possible. Bulliard's empirical observations are many, including those derived from a long vigil he kept observing Devil's Lair. He took photos, which he called the first ever of the animal in its native habitat. Accompanying one of these captions, which is as good as the description of any devil, note his long nose, tough body, and sturdy legs. He's made for travelling through the scrub frame. Jack Burr's prediction that doesn't protect an important historical document is reproduced here in full. Okay. Dear, it's beautiful. This unique animal, a sort of living link between the high marsupials and the most primitive of all, once it lived on the mainland from which it seems to have vanished, today is making its last stand, its last fight for survival in Tasmania. And in all the world, there are only, there is only 26,215 square miles left to it. But even in such a small part of the world as this, the Tasmanian devil, the Sarcophilus, is encountering ignorance that could exterminate zoologists and government. I love this. Oh, God. Experts are unanimous that the devil is fully justifies as the protected animal tags it wears, but for the last 2 years, many Tasmanian farmers and graders have claimed it to be a ferocious poultry and land killer. Give us permits to kill him in traps or with poison, they clamour. Recently, some farmers gave the press this statement, which embodies a kind of death sentence for the devil. They wrote, quote, "The devil has been attacking lambs and poultry. Wombats are also disappearing. Unless something is done about the devil now, it could become as much a menace as the dingo on the mainland." These gentlemen apparently cannot tell the difference between a devil and a dingo. The devil is just about the size of a terrier. A dingo is a non-marsupial and consequently has a much higher IQ than the devil. The rate of mortality at birth is much greater than in the marsupial devil than those births of the hardier and more precocious one than that of the dingo. It's possible that the dingo contrived to exterminate the complete devil family on the mainland. There are about 200 dingoes to every devil. The farmer's statement was followed by another one from Dr. Gilead's Zoology Department at the University of Tasmania. He said, quote, "The devil is rarely found in the southern regions, but recently 18 devils were captured and sent to me the university examination of the stomachs and showed only two of them had wool. Thus, it appears that the devil will occasionally take a lamb, but on the country in which it lives, it finds it easier to take smaller marsupials, wombats, bettongs, brutus, extremely prolific thoroughgrates, or scrub wallabies. However, some thoughtless farmers and grazers are killing them devils on their properties. Yet how many lambs do they lose to the devils? How do they know that the few lambs that they lose are actually killed by devils? Unless they see devils in the act of killing their livestock, they cannot be sure that these animals are killers. Tracks don't mean a thing in the rough, scrubby, rocky bush in which the graziers' sheep roam. As to poultry kills, these can be blamed on domestic cats gone wild, which are very plentiful in most parts of Tasmania. Likewise, native cats may be killers, and which take eagles, crows, hawks, and many others account for some lands too. There is very little known about the animal. The only reliable information about the animal is given by Thornton in his classic Furred Animals of Australia. He gives 58 lines on the animal, not much to go by, but not much for farmers and graziers to pin killings on any devils. The first record of its existence comes to by the Deputy Surveyor Robert Harris in 1808. the animals were very common. It is probably its devilish appearance that earned its present moniker. The adjective Tasmania was added when it was found that it lived only in Tasmania. But does it really? There is something that will put doubts in your mind. Mr. Thornton writes, a devil was killed in Tilbrook, about 60 miles from Melbourne in 1912, which may possibly have escaped from the zoo of a private captivity. Fossil remains discovered in parts of Australia. Recent appearance of skulls found in localities of Victoria, including portions found amongst the bones of existing marsupials in the kitchen midden of Aborigines, supports the view that they may still exist there. Thus, Tasmanian devils should be regarded as an Australian animal and animals that may exist or not. Oh my God. In the mainland, but which, for the utmost importance to nature lovers, this is a shooting magazine, Outdoors Man. It has been classified as subfamily Dasyurane, which includes all our marsupial predators, i.e. native cats, tiger cats, Tasmanian tiger. Here again, there's ample proof that this Tasmanian animal lived in the mainland in ancient times, and where it may have been exterminated by a more developed dingo, which may be introduced there by the Aborigines or Asian peoples many thousands of years ago. And a mysterious striped marsupial cat of North Queensland, which appears to be no guess but a reality. These predators are in the way of relation to American possums, which are also marsupials and carnivorous, but are tree dwellers, whereas the Daras, except for the tiger cats, are ground dwellers. Thus, the devil, along with a native cat in Tasmania, Tiger Thalassin, is the only ground-dwelling marsupial predator on Earth. Well, I wouldn't say that. If it became extinct, the animal species would disappear from the face of the Earth. Do you realise its importance? Obviously, quolls and things like that. The thoughtlessness, meat-hungry early settlers of Tasmania contrived to exterminate the island's emu, the most blotted out the forested kangaroo, it's wholly protected but its numbers are small, managed to practically exterminate the thylacine or the Tasmanian tiger. They also poisoned, shot and trapped hundreds of devils before the animals became protected. Together with settlers, slaughtered a range of diseases which has not been explained since they have been attacked, the members of the Darasin in Tasmania some 50 years ago. All of a sudden, the outback people and the naturalists of the day realised these animals had become rare and that some, like the tiger, seemed to have disappeared. What happened to them, nobody knows. And that's why scientists are most concerned with the fear of the devil. For some reason, these primitive marsupials seem to have it harder to survive these days. And devils have been able to survive in Tasmania, possibly because there are no dingoes there. Nor are there any foxes. Thus, the devils and the thylacines have no competition. 40 years in Tasmania, I've encountered exactly 11 devils in the bush and have spent many hours observing three in captivity. From my observations, I've concluded that it is almost impossible to establish exactly what the devil's habitat. I've encountered devils in the rainforest at the Cradle Mountains and St. Clair Reserve in the west coast and the island. I've seen one at the tea tree gum bush along Crotty Creek on the west coast. This part of the island is a very heavy rainfall. But I have seen devils around dry, scrubby, rocky bush of Table Mountain, central Tasmania, and also the high, bleak country around Arthur's Lakes. Thus, it looks like the devil has a wide range in the island, but I feel that its favourite habitat must be the country of dense bush. He doesn't look like a savanna animal, a runner. He isn't the fast runner. Dogs can easily overtake him. He is essentially a scrub animal. Physically, he seems just made for a scrubby country. His compact, tough body, his short legs, assets for him to run through bush and to crawl under logs and burrows and into hollow trees. As far as I know, he isn't a tree climber, but I do know that he is a very silent mover. Another asset for him to hunt in scrubby country and approach his quarry silently. It is always jet black, with some spots of stripes on different parts of the body. Some I have seen had only one stripe across the throat. Others had one or two spots at different parts of the body. Mainly he's all black, though, and his colour is as excellent camouflage as scrub, placing a black rag amongst. My God, it goes on. The fallen logs, I have failed to spot it from a distance. This same black rag could hardly have been seen from the deep shadows of the rainforest. It is almost invisible from a distance in a stand of tea tree gums or dockwood. Moreover, at night, the devil's black coat must render him almost invisible. They will tell you he is a nocturnal animal, but strangely enough, of the 11 I have seen in the wild, only one was at night, at 2:20 a.m. in a damp inn at Port Dewey Track. If the devil preys on better arms, wombat, spotters, scrubs, wallabies, he must go hunting towards the evening and in the early morning, which are the times these small marsupials are feeding on their watering places. Whether or not the devil and its quarry continue to roam about the bush all night through, though I do not know, I've spent many nights sitting out on the bush with spotlights in order to spot the game. I've seen where possums, bandicoots, and occasional scrub wallabies, except for that one devil I have mentioned. Observing three captive devils, I know that they spend a great part of the day slumbering in their cage. The devils are a mother and her two young, a gal and a boy. During the day, they are always asleep, bunched up together, and even on top of one another, but never separated. Towards the evening, they wake up and begin to prowl around the cage, snarling and growling. Each is a prime animal and eats one rabbit a day. The devils don't make good pets. They aren't dangerous animals either. The friend of mine who keeps three in captivity has never been able to chum up with the little devils. He can handle the females. They don't never attempt to bite him, but they don't show any affection either. But he is quite unable to put his hand on a male. He's a real tough guy. But as soon as my friend enters the cage, the devil snarls and shows his fangs. But he is a small animal weighing about 12 pounds. This is the weight of a prize specimen and can be put out to circulation, a well-packed kick if he decides to attack. Devil smell. I have struck two devil's ladders, just scrub beds under logs, and the smell coming from them is appalling. Like all other Diarceras, the female devil's pouch is oriented towards the backwards, that is, counterwise to kangaroo. She seems to have an unusual litter of two young and carries the pouch for perhaps 3 months or so. The pouch there are two pairs of teats, which is four teats. In the old days, devils were killed by dogs, shot by hunters, poisoned, trapped. As you can imagine, shooting a devil is no great shakes as a sport, but as you do have to shoot quickly, because although he's a slow runner, he can move plenty fast in the scrub. He moves in a lopsided, shambled gait. Beautifully, this is actually a very good article, isn't it? Oh, and it goes on, reminiscent of the bear. In the kangaroo snaring boom some years ago, many devils were caught in snares, but they didn't stay caught for long. They chewed up the string and got themselves free game. They couldn't, of course, get away from a dingo trap, which many were caught. To see devils in their native habitat is not easy. Much depends on the luck, and a great deal depends on bushcraft too. First off, watch for droppings. The devil's droppings are the size of a possum's, but crushed devils always contain some bones, feathers, hair. This is octavital flesh, whereas the herbivorous possum's dung contains only vegetable matter. The droppings of native tiger cats are smaller, however, which is quolls. However, you may find droppings that are still be far from finding the devil. How far does he range? I don't know. He may be here today and 10 miles away tomorrow. Hunting kangaroos with dogs is perhaps the easiest way to see devils. Dogs often flush them out of their hiding places. That's just what happened a few weeks ago when our dogs roused a devil from underneath the log at the Tasmanian, Central Tasmanian. We let the little chap get away, and then I went to inspect the log. Just under it, completely hidden from sight, was his lair, scrub bit badly matted and droppings, with droppings and badly stinking. Nobody has ever taken pictures of wild devil in his native habitat, and here I had a chance. A week later, I was back there. I chose a hiding place about 750 yards from the devil's lair and watched it with a pair of binoculars. About 6 o'clock in the evening, just at sunset, I spotted the animal emerging from its home and hitting the hunting trail. I followed him again at dawn the next morning. That afternoon, on my second day there, I made my first preparation of the bitches. With the wind blowing against my face, just the way I wanted to make sure that he wasn't that he was still in those parts, the devil's nose. I approached cautiously his lair and began building a hide. I was cutting a pole with my jungle knife when I heard a noise and saw the devil leaking its way to from those parts. He'd heard or scented me and decided to beat it. That's okay for me. I built my hide from natural vegetation about 20 foot from the devil's lair under a log. Then I shouldered my backpack and made tracks for home. A week later, I went back there. By this time, I hoped that the devil had recovered from the scare I gave him and become familiar with my hide as well. However, I wanted to make sure he was still in those parts. So that evening, found me a hiding place with my binoculars. Sure enough, around sunset, the animal emerged from the log and hit the hunting trail. As soon as he'd gone, I took my camera and telelens, a tripod, a thermos of coffee, and some sandwiches and sneaked inside my hide. I had no intention of photographing him with a flashlight because I'd sure spook him away from those parts. So I made myself comfortable in the hide and went to sleep. I'm sure I heard him return to his lair sometime at the night, but it might have been the noise of a roo in the wind I heard the step. The wind, by the way, was blowing hard in my face. At exactly 6:10 a.m. by my watch, when my heart almost skipped a beat as I crouched over my camera tripod inside the hide, I could just see the devil's head peering over the log. I made a telephoto picture. The click of the release button didn't seem to spook the animal. Perhaps he hadn't heard it. The wind was making plenty of noise. Gingerly, he clambered over the log for a few minutes, moved relentlessly about the low scrub. His sharp, pointed nose, it's the devil, sniffing the air, which has perhaps detected some suspicious smell. But the wind was being a great help to me. I made 17 pictures of the animal, showing him at various reactions before finally hit the hunting trail, moving away in a bear-like gait, which made him look like clumsy and slow. So I obtained the first pictures ever taken of the devil in its natural native habitat. From my observation, it looks like the animal, at least when I saw it there, left his lair at dusk, returned there sometime at night, and went hunting at dawn again. He probably returned shortly after sunrise. These times coincide with the feeding times of most ground marsupials. However, I should have had spent several more days in the spot to gather more accurate information, but I couldn't spend any more days. Let me hope that my great-grandchildren will be able to see and photograph this fascinating little animal, which represents one solitary species living on Earth. More than any other member of fauna does the devil need to be wholly protected. So let us hope that Tasmania's wildlife authorities will not allow farmers to destroy the animals, and let us hope that sportsmen and outdoorsmen who know of farmers who kill the devils will report them to the game inspectors and police officers. A person killing a devil can pay a fine up to £100 sterling, and that is a really cheap price to pay for this offence. There's different pictures of the devil. Pretty amazing things. Gilea, he has a ball in the head, and that's chapter 7 coming up, so I'll push this one off. So it's really interesting about the board and how the society really targeted them. So it's what you can ask these questions. That's a really brilliant piece of work there.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. may you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.